Good evening, James McCanny here with my Science Hour for December 28th, 2017. This is the last show of the year. Next week, a couple days, we'll be moving into 2018. And on the John Moore show this week, I said we should give 2017 a military salute, like a 21-gun salute, you know, like they do when they send a sailor or marine or military personnel off to their final resting place. We should have a 21-gun salute for 2017 because it was a war. Let me put it that way. That's all I can tell you. Hopefully we've opened up the door and also Pandora's box. If you've been following the internet, it is ripe with word that a lot of high-level people are, let's put it this way, destined for striped suits. So just follow that. I'm not an expert on that. I don't claim to be. And I don't see where there's real solid evidence other than circumstantial evidence to indicate that those things, those incidents are happening. But there's a lot of there are a lot of indications that yes, in the background, and obviously they cannot announce this on in the news, and the news, the mainstream media wouldn't announce it anyway. But anyway, all I'm suggesting is go take a look at that and follow it. But anyway, what I'm going to do here is do a little review of this year and what they are claiming to be some of the highlights scientifically of the year 2017. We'll see how they affect you and if they're really highlights or if they're really more of the same. First, a couple announcements. I believe I talked about this on the show. But there's a movie out, I think it came out in last September, so it's not exactly new, but it's called American Made. Tom Cruise, I saw the movie, and Tom Cruise, you know, he's done Mission Impossible and other action movies, and this one is no exception, where he's an actual real live person in the name of Barry Seal. And so I recommend that people watch this, although, as per Hollywood, they really don't get the story correct. But in a sense, they couldn't include the blatant accusations that Bill Clinton, and, of course, the little wife Hillary, back in the late 70s, early 80s, were part of the drug running operation in Amina, Arkansas, where Billy was governor. And of course, their association with the Bushes. It does at the end bring that in and the Iran-Contra deal with Oliver North. But the mistake in the movie, and of course, like I say, what they really couldn't portray too much, although it was in there, was that he was working for the CIA in the drug running part of this, and the money was supporting the private Navy, Air Force, covert operations, let's put it that way, of the CIA back in those days when they were subverting Central and South American countries, the Mideast, for which we're still paying dearly for the erroneous ways of the CIA. A lot of the terrorism we're seeing today is a result of their activity, which gave birth to people that really hated the United States. And if you had lived in those countries, you would hate the United States also. And so around the world, hundreds of countries literally have had their lives and citizens' lives drastically affected, and the governments replaced, a lot of death, a lot of destruction, a lot of animosity, a lot of, would you say, controlled governments that bought into the banker world because of greed and corruption, something that's still going on today. And the Rothschild, I've always said that, and this is true, I mean, the CIA is the police force of the World Bank. But the movie American Made gives you a small glimpse into their operations, their nefarious operations around the world, and some of the results and how these things are linked together. Remember Reagan, when he was president, George Bush, who was head of the CIA previously, George Bush Sr. was the vice president at the time, and they were involved in the Iran-Contra deal. And remember, Ronnie Reagan had to say, I don't remember how many dozens of times in the hearings, the congressional hearings, etc., and clearly covering up what he at least knew was going on under his watch. But he wasn't president. He was never really president. Oddly enough, he was shot in the side by George Bush Sr.'s next-door neighbor's kid. I mean, just gets you right back to home. Isn't it wonderful how neighborhoods hang together these days? It gives a new meaning to the neighborhood model of American life. When the vice president's neighbor son ends up shooting the president. I mean, how much more neighborly can it get? And of course, that put Ronnie Reagan in the hospital, George Bush in control of the White House, and the rest is history. So anyway, see the movie American Made, and as I say, it gives you a glimpse into the corruption back there, but it shows Barry Seal as being the guy with all the money. And that's not the case. I mean, clearly Barry Seal made a lot of money. But most of the money, 99.9% of it, went to the Clintons in Arkansas, which fed into the CIA, and then that gave them their position with the Bushes, and then ultimately where Hillary thought she should be president because it was her turn. Her turn. I love it. So anyway, another quick announcement. NASA says that it's going to have evidence in 20 or 30 years that there are aliens. They don't have any now. They're not quite sure how this is going to all play out, but 20 to 30 years, just trust them. They're going to have information that there are aliens, or alien life, so as they put it. But the reason I'm mentioning this is because this past week, the Pentagon came out and through the New York Times made some hocus-pocus announcement, big write-up in the New York Times, that they were doing this investigative work and found top-level secret people that they could talk to about the investigation into the UFO phenomenon, unidentified flying objects. And when it got all done, when the tidal wave of misinformation swept across the land and swept back out to sea, there was nothing there. It was vacuous. There was no reporting. They just had teams and investigative reporting, and they were searching into this, and they were talking to people, and they didn't find anything. They didn't have a single shred of any real information at all. They're just going to investigate it for you, the population. Oh, isn't that swell? So I don't know where that came from. It appears that the New York Times did this all by itself, but the New York Times doesn't do anything all by itself. It is a tool of the CIA disinformation arm. So they want to control that narrative. They want NASA in there. They want the Pentagon in there. They want the New York Times, and making it look like they're really investigating this. And then I really had to chuckle, because they go back and they say that Terry Reid, the criminal senator from Arizona, is the one, Nevada, is the one who allegedly started this in 2007 by some congressional inquiry. And then Terry Reid, he's the guy, by the way, when you're going back to the American-made movie, Terry Reid, R-E-E-D, wrote a book. It's called Compromised, first watch the movie American Made and then read the book Compromised. It's a big book, but it's the full title is Clinton, Bush, and the CIA by Terry Reed, R-E-E-D. If you can find a copy, read it. Most of them have been snarfed up and done away with out of libraries, etc., but I believe you can still find them. So watch the movie American Made and then read the book Compromised, Clinton, Bush, and the CIA. Okay, so anyway, the Pentagon apparently wants to, and of course they're subjugate to the CIA too. I don't know if you're aware of that, but that's the pecking order in control. And so they want to control the UFO narrative, the alien narrative. They want to be able to control that and put it out like there's some kind of big studies that have been done. And of course, you can go back to Project Blue Book, which started literally during World War II when we had lots of flying and lots of pilots. And these pilots were seeing aircraft. Now, the belief of some people is that these were actually German aircraft, experimental aircraft. Topic, J. Allen Hynek, I believe it was his name, dropped out of Project Blue Book because he saw it becoming a farce. And he started doing his own analysis and just under his own name, studying UFO phenomena, trying to gather data, etc. Then there were people like, for example, Whitley Strieber, who experienced phenomenon and really didn't know how to explain them, so he came out with a book entitled Communion. And he was a famous novelist. His novels were, you know, very highly regarded author, very creative. And then all of a sudden he started having these unexplainable phenomenon occurring to him, which involved aliens. And so he didn't know if they were psychological. He didn't know if they were or what the situation was. So he came out with this book in somewhat of a plea for rational study on this topic. And he didn't claim that he had been visited by UFO people. He said that was what his extrasensory perceptions had indicated to him. And he wondered also, could this be psychological? Could this be something that he was seeing, but other people seeing this also? And so it was a phenomenon. And I remember seeing him on Johnny Carson's show at the same time when Carl Sagan was on there. And Carl Sagan, of course, was the so-called accepted authority of astronomy and all things that, you know, what you might call the rational person of the day, poo-pooing Whitley Strieber for talking about this topic. And Carl Sagan, with his very arrogant head back, I don't have time for such nonsense. Like, his time was so valuable that it could not be wasted with this ridiculous information about UFOs. But now they're trying to come out and control the narrative, saying, well, yeah, they've got information, but they haven't released any of it. And so do they have real information? Well, and then I heard a story where they say, oh, they have found a piece of metal that they can't identify, therefore that proves aliens. I mean, this is just absolute nonsense. Absolute nonsense, because real studies have been going on by private people, by individuals for a long time that have provided a lot of information. In fact, I was speaker, not necessarily about the UFO human experience phenomenon. I was a speaker 2 years in a row at the UFO Congress, where I released my Atlantis to Tesla book there. And it was, interestingly enough, attended by a very large group of high-level scientists from the sent there by the government. So they were very interested in what I had to say, and some of them came up and visited with me after my talk. So I got a first-hand view that there's a lot of interest and a lot of interest in my work regarding electromagnetic propulsion systems, which you can see in my book, Atlantis to Tesla, The Colburn Connection. One of them is a reprint from an IEEE publication back in the day that was around the mid-1980s, and you can also see my talk at the UFO Congress on my reproduced videos, the remastered videos DVD that I have on my webpage. So it appears that the dialogues, they're trying to maintain those dialogues. And all of the dialogues regarding private space programs, I'll be talking about those in a minute. That'll be one of my main science topics, is going through the so-called advances in private space. And I'll just give you a little prelude to that. Everybody that's succeeding is now becoming associated with government or old boy Boeing, you know, old boy projects. And so, but there's some very interesting work going on, like the concept of reusable rockets. And if you're going to reuse a rocket, why not just use an aircraft with the advantage of wings, the 10-to-1 advantage of aerodynamic lift of the wings? You use a lot less fuel. You can take off from any runway on the planet. You don't need a special launch pad. You can fly the launch pad, the launch vehicle, to any place on the planet and launch from any place. You don't have to launch from any designated, specially equipped launch pad with, say, liquid oxygen capability. No, you don't need that. Although that's where it's going to go. But I'll be doing some commentary on that. But in general, in the world of space science, astronomy, etc., that it's very clear that the narrative is going to be controlled by the controlled news media and the controlled science news media. Just a quick commentary on my own personal work. I'm going to have some major announcements coming up here very shortly, but I am concentrating in the background, in addition to my more esoteric work, my mathematics, etc., but my main concentrations right now are on the issues of energy and water. Now, food is being handled actually by what you'd call the growing organic non-GMO movement. You cannot go into a grocery store now without finding an organic area, but it's still they're still playing that organic card and not talking about the hybrid part. Using hybrid seeds grown organically is not a good deal. So that's the card they're playing. And, of course, you have to watch out when they say organic. What does that mean? If you're getting your food from Mexico, that could mean human waste. Your food was grown with, guess what, boys and girls? So the term organic has been watered down. You have to really look and see, and also avoid the word natural. Wow, that's a term you're going to find plastered all over all kinds of products, that it's natural. Well, you know, there's no definition for natural. What does it mean? I mean, does it mean that it's good? Does it mean it came only from nature's products? No, doesn't mean that. Natural is just a term that many companies have picked up to promote, and it's kind of catching. It says all natural. Gee, that sounds pretty good to me. Only problem is it has no meaning. It has absolutely no meaning as to the quality of the product. And so anyway, in the background, we're trying to work on better classification, although that's difficult. So when you go and look at organic, people go, oh, I always eat organic. Well, you're eating hybrid food, hybrid seeds, GMO, grown organically, and organically, you know, take that with a big, big grain of salt. Okay, so anyway, my big efforts today are in the terms of energy and water. And you'll be seeing more and more of that. Of course, I have my water filter company, JMCC Water Filters, which has been around now for 15 years, cutting edge, best products on the planet. There's nothing like them, made in the USA. And this fall, and actually this past year, we had various times when we were behind on shipping products. But that is pretty much over now. And then in this fall, we had the hurricanes. And I've expressed my dismay at the emergency relief agencies that they don't stock anything. Then when an emergency happens, they come and say, oh, there's an emergency. We got to clear all the shelves of all your product, and because people are dying out there. Well, you know, they have to understand, they have to order in advance stock, and it's really not a help to the people looking for emergency goods to have them come 3 or 4 weeks later. By then, people are sick and dying, and, you know, a water filter 4 months or 4 weeks or 5 weeks after the disaster is not a good deal. You need it right away. You need it that day. You need your clean water. Not 5 weeks later, 6 weeks later, you know. So anyway, that's something I'll be working on in the background also. But it's very difficult because these relief agencies, I hate to say it, but it looks like they're in the business of optimizing or let's say minimizing their payout. So they only pay out if there's an emergency. And of course, then there's when they get an influx of money and they have money to spend. But that model of emergency relief has to end. It's not a good model. It's not a good model for the suppliers. It's not a good model for the victims. And it's really, really not a good model for the relief agencies, since that's their clients, so to speak, are people that are standing with nothing in their hand at the time. Okay, so energy, water, science and engineering. Now, here's what's going on. There's a tremendous amount of creativity, and the way I see this, in my association with people, I see people who are young and adventurous and have talents, whether it's from trade school type of talents up to engineering or CAD-CAM, etc. But most of them need direction. They need some kind of direction in which to put their energies. And what I'm seeing is that the people over 60 are the people who are going to be taking this financial boost that's coming into this country. I heard that Apple is repatriating $300 billion, if you can even imagine that, $0.3 trillion, and bringing that money back into the United States for investment. That's a vast, vast amount of money when some companies might need $1 or $2 million to get off the ground. You know, that's a lot of companies that can get innovative starts. And there's innovations out there. And most of the big players now, the big swingers at the plate, the guys swinging the big bats, the Elon Musks and the Jeff Bezos, are marching down what I would call the wrong road. They're doing some good things, like Musk with his cars and batteries, doing very good work. But in terms of outer space, they're living in the cave ages. They're making a much better chisel to chisel letters into the rock. Let's just put it that way, where they're not going to the printing press or the mass media or the internet, where communication would be good. I'm just saying that as an analogy. They're just making a better hammer and chisel to chisel into rock, using rockets as a way of trying to get into space. So, and I'll be talking more about that. But science and engineering is in the future, in this upcoming year, and it's already happening, is going to be coming from groups that are 60 and older, because those are the people that have had corporations, they've had companies, they've been there, they probably worked on both sides of the desk as employees and engineers, and as people who've created companies and know what it takes to make a successful company work. And I'm one of those people. I've been on both sides and know the pitfalls of corporations that grow, become financially adept, and then all of a sudden crumble into chaos because they're being run by financial people, not by the scientists and engineers. So decisions are made based on financial reasoning and by, say, people with MBA in finance. Corporate decisions that are engineering decisions are being made by people who really don't understand what's going on this planet. And so futures in science and engineering, I look at just a comment. I get my American Geophysical Union meeting updates, and these are just Tier 2 scientific vacations. In some of these meetings have been going on for 40 years, and they're still wallowing in the same mire. They have not progressed. They have not brought us new information. They're not with it at all in terms of where the universe is. So Tier 2 science is going to remain where it is. Scientific vacations, the government funding, etc., which unfortunately includes NASA, going back to the moon with their space capsule, rocket technology. No. These people are going to be left in the dust. And in, like I said before, in 10 years, you're not going to recognize the space race. The people who are putting big money now are throwing their money in the wrong direction. The Elon Musks and the Bezoses and the the only one that's getting even close is Richard Branson. But he's now teaming up with Elon Musk and Boeing and the old boy school for rockets into space, etc. So, you know, the real way of getting into space and maneuvering and taking populations into space is through private space programs. But that's those people that are succeeding, what I see now, it's the same thing that happened in the science world, is that when somebody gets up and really shows promise, they get snapped up into that tier one level. They get up there, they think, oh boy, here I am, I'm now with the big boys. They start signing non-disclosure agreements, and then they got them. Then they got them. They're locked into a system that they can't get out of, and they didn't even know how the trapdoor closed on them. So I see, you know, these people, they're getting government contracts, going to the space station. That's a slippery slope into being controlled into that same group. And they don't care who you are. They don't care if you're Elon Musk with billions of dollars, deep pockets, willing to spend it. They don't care. They don't care if you're Boeing Corporation, McDonnell Douglas, or Ball Aerospace. They don't care. You just get consumed by a system that is much bigger than you are and that will very much control anybody. And then you have your fleets of engineers and you're back to square one doing the same old crappy science and engineering that everybody had done before. So real science, real engineering, real innovation will come out of private, small private corporations, and it's going to be a challenge for them to hold the road because any of the good ones it'll be very difficult for them to get funding to progress, and so sooner or later they're going to have to sign on with the big boys, and that's the end of the road. That's where innovation stops. That's where things go tier one, black ops. And that's where it goes out of the public useful region. And so that's why this facade of, oh, the Pentagon's investigating UFOs, or NASA's going to 20 years, we'll try and go to the moon again. You know, that's all the facade to keep science away from the public. Just a quick commentary also, there have been a lot of sealed indictments. There have been a lot of criminal cases opened up in the last month against high-ranking people. And these are actual situations that are going on. Investigate them. But this does affect science because the ability of scientific ventures to get out of the mold of government support, the support of government, the government support of science has been so invasive and so complete that, and like I say, only the visible companies that you see getting funded won't ever work. They're never going to get off the ground. Like the three-blade wind generator doesn't work. Yet 88,000 of them have been installed around the United States and, you know, double, triple that around the world. Something that simply never had a chance of working physically, theoretically, a joke, but they're installed all over the place because of government subsidies. Solar panels also. And by the way, my paid cast in December, the December paid cast deals with the myth of alternative energy, the myth of alternative energy or alternative energy revealed. And the where I go through from the history of alternative energy, I have one of the sessions deals with Tesla, the grid and grid design, which is very interesting. And then I think the third episode deals with alternative energy industry as we see it today. And then this week's episode deals with the real future of alternative energy. It's something I know a lot about. So that would be a good one to join if you're, you can also still have the half price sale on back issues going all the way back to August of 2016 for half price. You get all of those back issues. And of course the buttons to order those are on my sales or on my homepage. Go check that out. The paid cast, jmccsci.com. I recommend that everybody join the paid cast. And last month, by the way, I was discussing space travel, past, present, and beyond was the topic for November. So I encourage you, and also in every month, I include information about Tesla. So something that of great interest to everybody out there. And these, by the way, are for both the trained scientist and the general public. But back to my topic there, arrests being made and how that affects science. You're going to see a lot of the people who may have directed scientific policy in this, and these are politicians, but for example, let me just give an example. Hillary Clinton was going to put $50 billion into solar panels and as a government subsidy in the solar panel business. But solar panels are not the solution. That's why the power companies love solar panels. They promote them. They want you to install them. And in most cases, where you have a grid connect, even though you pay for all this equipment, it will never be grid connected. They don't tell you that. They don't tell you that. And I know places right now in the United States where the government, the state governments are encouraging with subsidies cut rate solar panels to put on your house, and the people are flocking in and signing up. They're saying it could cut your electric bill by 75%. Well, if you added a little more, why shouldn't it cut it by 100%? Why would you have to pay anything at all? Well, they see they never go to that 100% because they want, this is a scam to keep the central power companies in business. And so literally they have, at the same time, passed laws preventing grid connects. and allowed the power company to set standards to prevent grid connect. While at the same time, the same government, state government or local government's promotion are promoting the installation of solar panels. So the people go in, and this is the point. They're going to make people spend their alternative energy money in the wrong direction. Isn't that special? Now, you're not going to read about that in the New York Times, I guarantee you. But let me start out with this some commentary now on the stories that are current in private space industry. And first of all, the Strato launcher. Now, this was a Paul Allen. Remember Paul Allen, billionaire, along with Bezos and Musk and other people that have made their money on internet ventures, has funded, this is through Scaled Composites. Remember, Burt Rutan won the XPRIZE, did it with a launch vehicle that's basically an airplane with the capability of going up to about 50,000 feet. The White Knight is the launch vehicle. It's a runway-to-runway launch vehicle. Goes up to about 50,000 feet and then launches a solid booster rocket and can take people up to low Earth orbit. So he was the first individual private enterprise company under the funding of Richard Branson, and won the XPRIZE, $10 million Ansari XPRIZE. And the White Knight, you can look it up to see what it looks like. It's kind of hard to describe. It's twin fuselage and the carrier vehicle, and that's designed to carry payloads in the middle. And I'm not really convinced that that's a good design to make bigger, but that's what they've done. So the Strato launcher, it's called, was rolled out, and this past week, in fact, had a runway test where they fired up the big six engines. It's literally the biggest airplane ever built. And so I'm just throwing my card in the circle and saying that this is the spruce goose of launch carrier vehicles. It's the biggest airplane ever built. It has a wingspan of a football field, six giant jet engines, three on each wing, and two fuselages. It lands on the two fuselages, and then it has a carrier bay in the middle, which is just open wing, where they would attach the payloads and take them up to what they call cruising altitude. 50,000 feet is usually the upper limit for air-burning engines, which, by the way, is going to change. And that's something I've said. People will ultimately realize that they're carrying fuel, like jet fuel, for example, and by carrying liquid oxygen and turning those same engines into cryogenic engines, or dropping the engines off, bringing them back and reusing them, which would be a bit difficult, but just using those same engines with oxygen, capping off the top and basically making them converting them into liquid rocket engines, instead of going to 50,000 feet, now you have the capability. Let's say, let's just go in terms of miles. You have to get above 60 miles, 100 kilometers, 60 miles, to get into what they call the edge of space. That's out of the atmosphere enough where you're not going to experience drag in the low Earth orbit that will bring the spacecraft, drag it so it comes back into the atmosphere. So you have to get past 60 miles, a little bit more, maybe 100 miles to be safe long term, but in that region. And to do this, you have to do two things. You have to get up out of the atmosphere, but then you have to get horizontal at a velocity of about 17,000 miles an hour. And so that's just plain physics. So it's simply a matter of getting enough thrust to move your payload, whatever the mass is, at a velocity of 17,000 miles an hour in a horizontal direction. So a lot of these companies are going into low Earth orbit. They're not going into orbit. They're just going up into above that 60-mile range, because it's a whole different ball game to fly downrange and get going up to 17,000 miles an hour and insert into orbit. So, like the, I'll be talking about the some of the flights, recent flights, where they're just going up to 60 miles and then coming back into the atmosphere. Okay, that's swell, but that's not low Earth orbit. That's a whole different ball game. So that's something you should understand. But what I'm saying is that with this concept of the strato launcher, the vehicle that Bert Rutan's corporation, Scaled Composite, built, and I believe Rutan is out of there now. I think Scaled Composite, Bert Rutan is off, retired, and has handed this off. He might still have a hand in some of the work there. You know, a lot of times those guys are still around for, you know, advice, etc. But to have an airplane that big and its actual lift capabilities, I think what we're going to see here is the limit to that type of a craft. And now here's the reason why. Let's take a Boeing B-52 bomber, which is a very capable craft. It was, of course, time-tested. It has a very high range, or even the B-1, B-2 bombers have very high altitudes. They can go up to very high altitudes. And they are built for payload. They can carry a lot of material. And so there are jets, I can guarantee you, that can go up to very high altitudes, much more than 50,000 feet, with specially built aircraft. But in terms of miles, this was my point, 50,000 feet is about 10 miles. So that's pretty good. Now you're up to that altitude, but how fast are you going? You're going at around maybe, 600 miles an hour. And if you're at the equator and you're going in the direction of the spin of the Earth, okay, now you're at 1,600 miles per hour relative to that velocity of 17,000 miles per hour that you have to get. And you're still 50 miles from the edge of space. So you really have not gotten that far. So the real end game launch vehicle from runway is one that can get up to about 50,000 feet with air burning jet engines. You cap those off. You then start using an oxygen supply where you can go literally what's called cryogenic. In other words, you are using your own oxygen supply to fuel the engines. Now you take this up to maybe 200,000 feet. And the reason you do this is because all of this heavy hardware then is going to come back down and land on Earth. And is that a step better than sending a heavy lift launch vehicle rocket up through that to that same level and then sending out your second stage, which is the booster for the payload to get out to 17,000 miles an hour and insert into orbit? And so what they're doing now is the SpaceX and the, Blue Origin or whatever, are getting up to, Elon Musk is already able to get into orbit. So his Falcon rockets are already doing that. And of course, he had to sign on with the military and become one of the boys, so to speak, to be able to do all of this. And that's one of my points, is that as these companies become space capable, they're going to be gobbled up. They're going to be associated with Boeing, and pretty soon they're going to be, it's already happening, where Elon Musk is being associated, for example, Richard Branson comes in with more money in the project, and so Musk loses control of the project. And so anyway, that type of thing is going to happen. But believe me, I don't care who you are with deep pockets. By the time they take you over and start maneuvering, and that's just for permission to be there. You have to understand that. because if they didn't have permission to be there, they'd be blowing your rockets up on the launch pad or your launch vehicles or your runway to orbit vehicle. They'd be blowing those up on the launch pad with directed energy weapons, and you wouldn't get, you know, 10 feet into the air. So this is the way it's controlled. But anyway, back to the strato launcher. My guess is, my professional scientific engineering opinion is that that will be the modern Spruce Goose, that it's not really a functional vehicle. You would be better off taking something like a B-52 bomber and opening up the bay doors and putting your second stage in there and modifying it so that you have a much bigger run down the belly of the aircraft, and dropping the aircraft so it's protected. When you're getting up to the 200,000-foot level with the cryogenic engines, that payload is protected. And then you just open up the payload bays, nose up the aircraft, drop it out, it takes off, and goes into low Earth orbit. But you're still dealing with, you know, a maximum insert capability of maybe 50,000 pounds in the payload, which is not bad. But if the trick is, here is the trick, that is to do it repeatedly, 1, 2, 3, 4 times a day. Now you can build a space station, the Stanley Kubrick type of space station. In other words, you are sending construction material into space. And so these would be long panels that are flexible enough to where you can bend them and join them and build your space station. And so anyway, that's the future. That is where the future would be. So I don't see the strato launcher, although it's a good idea, I'm sure they put a lot of money into it, but they say it may fly by the end of the decade. So what they've done so far is simply taxi it down the runway and test the brakes, test the engines. And if that's all they're doing and they're not going to fly this thing for another year and a half or 2 years, then I'd say they're already experiencing problems, because an aircraft that big is... I mean, there's lots of things that, lots of problems, that much more so than with small aircraft. Okay, so let's go on to, there was an article posted on livescience.com of what they called interstellar space travel. This was from September 2nd, 2016, so not exactly 2017. But all they posted were remnants of 1960s and 1970 futuristic speculations on spacecraft that could take us potentially to the next star. None of them are viable products, because they all depend on the concept of a ramjet or of something else. Or one was the space sail. Well, that's good. It works a little bit when you're near the star. But once you get out into interstellar space, it's useless. You have to understand how space works. And when I gave my information back in the early 1980s, I approached the military with bright eyes and scientists, young scientists with great ideas, only to realize that these people are a bunch of crooks, liars, cheats, thieves, and the companies that are associated with them. And so I learned that very early on, the hard way. But I realized that the universe had electrical properties, and that is the way to travel in outer space. You use the electrical energy that's already there. So, and of course... anyway, but these 1960 and 70 technologies for trying to get to the next star system are basically ramjet. You heat something up, send it out a nozzle, but where do you get the stuff to send out the nozzle and do this for many years at a time? Most ramjet engines burn their load in a very short amount of time. So maybe minutes. So where are you going to get enough stuff to heat up, whether it's nuclear or whatever? And so one of the designs is you have this big magnetic collection device that's out there that collects material, and then you heat it up and send it out the nozzle. But this is something that spans, you know, tens of thousands of miles, enough to gather the nothing, the almost nothing that's in vacuous interstellar space. And so that's not a solution either, because if you hit a pocket out there with nothing, let me tell you something, you ain't going nowhere. You're going to sit there, and just like in the doldrums, remember when they used to see the ghost ships come up and all the sailors were skeletons? Well, I'm sorry, buddy, but that's where you're going to end up. So the real way to move between the stars is with what I call the electric rivers to the stars. And so you can look at that. That's in my my videos, etc. But let's look at some of the other major, so-called major achievements of 2017. One is the, and by the way, not all of these have to do with manned spaceflight, but the first one is that the Cassini mission was crashed into Saturn last September. Well, no, let me tell you something, folks. They did not crash the Cassini mission into Saturn. I guarantee it. That spacecraft is still up there. It's gone dark, as they say. It's become a tool of the dark world. It's still there. They parked it in orbit around Saturn, and eventually someday they will have a mission that will go out there and refuel its retrojets that would move it around and position it. But in the meantime, it's perfectly fine in orbit around Saturn and keeps an eye with all of its instrumentation in the sky at Saturn. So no, they did not crash the Cassini mission into Saturn. So lie number one. Let's see, lie number two, they are talking about, let's see, this is from space.com. They have a list of the top space stories of the year. And they're dealing with SpaceX, who flew 18 missions in 2017, it says, more than twice any previous calendar year. But look at these flights. What are they doing? They're not private. They are, these are to the International Space Station and for other military-type launches. So basically, is this private space program? Why would you call this a private space program? Why would you even hint at it as being a private space program? It's absurd. Absolutely absurd. So basically, Elon Musk has sold out to the military-industrial complex, and he's getting the contracts. And he does have good equipment. He's got good employees. You know, it's an excellent program. I'm not saying anything negative about what they're doing. They have the heavy lift vehicle coming off the to start, you know, going into outer space with a bigger cargo, 2.5 times what the Falcon 9 will carry. But Elon Musk had to sell his soul to the devil to do this. Then there's Jeff Bezos, Blue Origin, on the maiden flight of its what's called the New Shepard suborbital vehicle. And suborbital, like I say, simply means going into space and dropping straight back down. And what are they doing? They're using the Apollo model of a space capsule, and partly mixed with the Russian model of landing it on ground, a soft landing on the West Texas plains. But basically suborbital. He's just going up past that 60-mile mark, coming back down and landing. Okay, so on a positive note, though, and this is really showing progress with the private space industry. There are other things, and so I'm just going to simply read from the space.com article here. It said that they mentioned the Stratolauncher out for its test drive down the runway. Rocket Lab and Vector flew their small satellite launchers for the first time. And Virgin Galactic's latest suborbital vehicle, the VSS Unity, conducted four glide tests in the skies over Southern California. And so then they also talk about SpaceX and Virgin-based company Orbital ATK made a series of uncrewed supplied runs to the International Space Station. So there you see Musk and Richard Branson teaming up in another company. And then SpaceX and Boeing developing an astronaut taxi. Then the next year they're planning on flying crews to the International Space Station. So that's something that the United States has depended on Russia for, launch vehicles. Okay, so then the number three article here, the U.S. astronauts going back to the moon. They're very happy that Trump signed the space directive. I've talked about that before. Sending NASA not to Mars, but back to the moon. And I think that's his way of telling them that they have to produce something. And that if they cannot go to the moon, then how are they going to go to Mars? So that's that for me is a very big step backwards. But I believe they'll be mixing technologies with the NASA and other private space corporations probably in the future to make that successful. And they also mentioned that North Korea has launched intercontinental ballistic missiles. So that would be what you might call an advancement in outer space. Okay, just a quick summary on other issues that other countries, China has spent cargo to its unmanned space station and returned to Earth, and they're using robotic fuel. India has launched 104 satellites in one shot, and these were for telecommunications. And then the military has its X-37B launch, which is a secret military mission. There's a lot of activity in outer space, but it's all based on inertial rockets. And when you look at the long term, none of these programs are going to take us very far in the solar system. Just remember the 10% plus extra 5% sale on my water filter products ends this week. So midnight, December 31st, is the last time you will get those kind of sale prices, because I am going to be taking that sale down. So go there, jmccsci.com. Order the water filter products, because everything is in stock and shipping again. Join the weekly paid cast, and also interested parties that are looking for alternative energy. I shouldn't even use that term, but looking for serious energy. If you have a farm or ranch, write to me about the wing generator, about installations, and we'll get back to you with a survey and talk to you about putting an installation at your location. This is Jim McCanny. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.